Welcome to Embrace the Grain Photography Podcast, a podcast focused on all forms of photography and the people who love to create. If you love cameras, analog or digital, old or new, expensive or economical, we welcome you here with open arms. Hello, everybody. First of all, I want to apologize for my sniffling, sneezing, and coughing. I have a cold. The kids share what they bring home from school, daycare, the rink, whatever, and I usually catch it. Lucky me. Anyway, so tonight we have Jake and Larry and Sherry on the show. And we have a book, some film news, and a camera find. So on with the show. Tonight I have a book, it's called Impounded, and it's edited by Linda Gordon and Gary Y. Okihiro. I probably butchered the last name, but from Gary. And what it's about is the censored images of the Japanese American internment camps. Now, the photographer is one that you probably have at least seen her images. If you don't know her, the name, it's Dorothea Lange. She's the one who shot the migrant farm workers of the 1930s, and her migrant mother image is quite famous. So anyway, she had this book taken from the internment camps in World War II, where the Japanese people, even if they were a Japanese citizen of more than one generation, or an American citizen, I'm sorry, of more than one generation, they were rounded up and placed into camps, which is quite sad, really. And it didn't just happen there. It happened in Canada as well. So her, it shows you all the, there's a map in here of all the internment camps. And the one that the photos are in California at Manzanar. And they're very powerful photos of the people and what they were allowed to pack up and go out of their homes with, and how they were rounded up on a bus and had to lock up their businesses and board the windows. The buildings were then rented out to other people. They were then bused to the camps, and the camps look basically like a barracks, or maybe even reminiscent of concentration camp buildings. And they're very ramshackle buildings. The people themselves waiting to go, they're all dressed very well. There's an older gentleman in the one picture, and he's sitting very regally on a folding chair with his bag at his feet. And it says grandfather waiting for the bus. But boxes and rolls of stuff, and many people lined up to go. And it's actually very sad and very powerful photos. There's photos of posters that were placed on walls in California, and they're very racist. But Manzanar, they grew their own food. They sent their kids to school. They had a hospital, and these people made do with what they had. It was very rough, and I would imagine the weather conditions weren't the greatest either. But anyway, it's a book that is very powerful if you so choose to have a look at it. And you could probably get it out of the library as well if you didn't want to buy it, but I found it quite interesting.
Yeah, Dorothea did some incredible work back in the day for the Farm Security Administration. Really powerful work, particularly on the migrant workers in California.
Yeah, I haven't seen this particular book, but I, when you mentioned it, I did look up some of the photos, and man, they are powerful. And you know, I mean, it is a concentration camp. The folks Absolutely. Were rounded up and concentrated into a camp, and that's pretty much the definition of a concentration camp.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, yeah. These people, yeah, in a lot of cases, were American and Canadian citizens just going about their normal lives, and then, of course, because of the war that happened, yeah, they had to totally uproot and restart their lives in captivity, yeah, which is incredibly sad.
Yeah, many of them never recovered once they got out, because what they'd had before is gone.
Yeah, yeah. Right, for sure.
So they're starting basically with nothing.
I found a picture of Dorothea, a small lady with a very large camera. I see that she's using a Graflex, a 4x5 SLR. So yeah. It wasn't like she was walking around with a Leica. She was, you can tell by the photos that they were taken with a large negative.
Yeah, wouldn't want to meet her in a dark alley, would you?
<No. laughs> Yeah, I'm sure she was quite fit carrying around that Graflex everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it was definitely a good book. And there's quite a bit of text at the front. I haven't quite read through it. I was always the kid that skipped to the pictures first. So I've looked at all the pictures and I'm about halfway through the text.
I mean, that's what you're there for in a picture book.
Yeah.
You would. Yeah. Yeah.
This is engrace the brain, not engrace the ink.
Right.
embrace the grain, not embrace the text.
Right. Right.
But yeah, so in photo news, we've had some news from Kodak.
Yeah, so a little bit of a price hike coming up for 2024. 5 to 10% around there.
Oh, did I cough on everybody? I didn't get it muted. Oh well, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's all right. We're recording when you're sick. It's our fault, right?
Or mine. Here, I thought I clicked mute.
Oh, no worries.
Yeah, 5 to 10%, which is about keeping with what they've done in the past, so.
Yeah, and that's just on 35 millimeter.
Yes.
It doesn't affect 120, and yeah.
Sheet film.
Or sheet film, right. And yeah, they did discount or drop the price on 120 somewhat recently, so that's good at least if you shoot 120, but yeah. Another price hike for Kodak if you shoot 35 millimeter.
Yeah, I guess we just have to embrace the fact that we're in a niche hobby, and it's not something that that, you know, the prices are never going to go down for us, I don't think, you know.
No.
Consistently.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it being a niche hobby. We definitely have to support our the manufacturers we have going now, because if we don't, obviously,
right,
they don't have much of an incentive to keep on going.
That's why I found two rolls at Walgreens the other day for $9.89 for 36 exposure rolls, and I bought them both. Not nice. Just because it was a pretty good deal, but also because I wanted the store to know that people buy their film. And full disclosure, sometimes I walk in and ask if they have film, even when I know they don't.
Never hurts to ask.
So the manager knows that there's someone looking for film. I don't know if he can do anything about it, but
I know that our local Walmart is the only source of film locally here. And it used to be you get Kodak Gold to the 200 speed for 24 exposure was $12.98 for a 3-pack. Now you can go in there, and it is a 3-pack of Fuji Superior 400, 36 exposure for $35.98.
That's more than 5%.
It is. It's a lot. It's a lot. There is, and that's all there is. You don't get to pick anything else, so you can't say, I'll just shoot black and white, because there is none.
Well, I'm lucky here in Knoxville, Tennessee, there is a bona fide camera store with bona fide film on the shelves, and I can usually go down and buy it. Now, it's not cheap, but I can go down, and if I need a roll of, they sometimes have, they have exotic films, but they sometimes have a roll of Ultramax or Gold, and they actually sell it across the counter like a normal store.
Yeah, I'm lucky to have a camera store close to me as well that sells film and chemistry.
Yeah.
But I've got the same deal going at our local Walmart, Sherry. It's about $35, $36 for three 36 exposure rolls of Superior 400.
Yes. Yeah. So anyway, on other news, there is a new film coming out, a color film from Harmon. Yeah. Now, I'm sure everybody has seen the advertisement about the Phoenix. The Phoenix is rising out of the dust. Yeah. Anyway, Phoenix film from Harmon is coming December 1st, the day after we dropped this show. So we were kind of discussing earlier, is it 200 or 400? And I'm not sure. It's 200, isn't it?
Yeah, so I saw a picture on Reddit earlier, and I'm not sure if they were supposed to sell that film before December 1st or not, but someone got a roll of Phoenix 200 ISO color film made by Harmon in England, and it came with a pin, and it's got a 2025 expiry date, so must be the real thing. So yeah, it looks like we might be getting a Phoenix 200 from Harmon, the people behind Ilford Films.
Yes.
I'll be down there waving my dollar bills in front of my camera store's face, hoping they get it soon.
Absolutely, yeah. Just extremely awesome to have a new option in the color film space.
Yes, yes. I don't know about you guys, but I love color film. I'm a color shooter, so this is excellent news for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mainly a black and white guy, mainly because it's easier. But either way, it's just amazing to have a new film, whether it's black and white slide or C41. It's just awesome to have a new option in 2023.
Right.
You know, Harmon's had a C41 black and white film for years, so
yeah, that's true.
I guess they just needed to sprinkle some dye in there.
Yeah. Well, and they have those disposable ones that are a color. I don't think it's Harmon brand film in them, but it is marketed as a Harmon product.
Not a Harmon product. It just goes under the Ilford Alpha color name.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm not 100% positive, but I believe I was reading somewhere that the film is made by Lucky in China. Okay. You can buy Lucky film elsewhere. I think it's decent stuff, but maybe not the best quality control. I think that's fairly common for Chinese films. I know Shanghai GP3 has a big QA problem, but it could be another option.
I assume they buy the whole camera preloaded from China.
They must, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's another option.
Yeah, I can't wait. You know, there's more options is always better than fewer options.
That's right.
Absolutely. A little competition for Kodak isn't a bad thing.
No. No. And having more than two brands is also
yeah.
It's basically you had Kodak and Fuji.
Yes, especially when Fuji seems ready and willing to axe a film line. So
I know we lost 400 each, and that was one of my favorites ever.
Yep, and we lost Akros, but then it came back as Akros 2, a little bit different, but
right.
Yeah, lost a lot of slide film.
Mm-hmm.
Provia, Astia, all the good stuff.
And the pack film.
And the pack film too, yeah. Yeah, the FP100C is the color stuff, I think, and yeah. I remember when I first got to film, I think it was around the time that that got discontinued, and I remember people selling that for like $30 a pack, I think. And now, yeah, people want $100.
I actually $200. Did buy three packages of it.
You got some.
And I sold it for just over what I paid for it, because I thought, that's not fair, really, to soak somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I sold the camera, and then I sold the film. I think I got $10 more than I paid for it.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
It was actually, had been in the fridge since I bought it, and I think it had only been expired a few months, so.
Oh, well.
Definitely was still good.
Yeah, you made someone happy.
Yeah, anyway.
I wish someone out there who's a wizard with a 3D printer would create some way to use those beautiful old Polaroids with 120 or with 4x5. Or, I mean, I know you can do it, but I want somebody to build something that takes two AA batteries and you slide it in the back and he's, you know.
Yeah, it would be neat. I know a lot of people take the roll film Polaroids from the 50s. Oh, and I've seen a few of those converted into 4x5. Pretty neat. Some of the higher end ones have rangefinders, even, I believe. So
yeah,
it's pretty neat to have in a portable sheet film camera. But yeah, obviously it's not a ready made thing. You have to do quite a bit of tinkering to get that set up.
Right. Yeah, and Jake, you managed to find yourself a pretty nifty camera last summer.
Yeah, in the podcasting off season, I was able to find a Rollycord 1 Nickel, which was made from 1933 to 1936, and I was able to find this somewhat locally, which is it's incredibly rare to find a Rollycord or Rolleiflex or really any TLR in general. I think I've maybe seen a C330 around here, but yeah, it's a TLR is not something you really see around here. So when I saw it in a camera lot on Facebook Marketplace, I had to inquire and get some more pictures, and yeah, sure enough, it was a Nickel Rollycord. So I had to talk down the seller from wanting to sell me the entire lot of box cameras and, you know, crappy cameras in general, I guess, stuff that nobody wants. And so I was able to come up with a price that we were both happy with, and I walked away with a Rollycord 1 Nickel that it does need a little bit of work, but it is usable as is. The shutter speeds are slow, of course. It's an unserviced camera. The waist level finder is extremely difficult to open. Definitely a lack of lubrication, I would say. Maybe it needs a little bit of adjustment on the hinges, but yeah, it's a work in progress, and it's just an awesome find for New Brunswick, especially. We don't get many cool cameras around here, at least not that I'm finding.
So without the leather, is it hard to grip?
No, it's not at all. It's got kind of like a checkered pattern. I'm definitely going to butcher the pronunciation, but the German word they called the finish was Tapetan, which means wallpapered. So it's kind of like an Art Deco checkered pattern in nickel. on the sides and the front and on the knobs as well. And then the back has a depth of field chart, which is also in brass, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. The back does have quite a bit of corrosion, but I think that's something that would probably clean up if I wanted to do it. But I think it looks kind of cool the way it is. It's got that nickel look to it, that golden nickel look, and it's got a bit of green mixed in there with the verdigris.
Patina.
Yeah, it's got that Statue of Liberty kind of copper nickel kind of oxidation to it. Yeah,
sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful camera. It's something that I really need to send to Gary, who has fixed a couple of my Rolleiflexes for me. Lens Medic YYC in Calgary. So yeah, that's one that's going to be heading out to him hopefully next year. And yeah, who knows?
Are you going to shoot a roll before you send it?
Yeah, I think I probably will. It is usable as is, as I was mentioning it. The shutter speeds are mostly okay, besides the slow speeds, and it focuses fine, unlike the other 1930s Rolleiflex I found. That was all locked up. But, yeah.
Is it a red window camera, or does it have a counter?
It has a red window on the bottom, just for lining up the first frame. And then, you just have to reset the counter on the side, and it does the counting for you.
Did I hear it?
Yeah, you did hear me reset the counter, yeah. I'm playing with it.
Thank you, a little ASMR for us there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also bought a replacement mirror for it, so that'll make it a bit more shootable as well. I don't think there's a Rolleiflex that was made, or Rolleicord made before, like, 1950, that has a bright screen. I think that's just kind of the way they came.
Yeah.
But a brand new mirror should help. I'm sure the original is probably probably lacking a bit of silver. But yeah. That's pretty much the only gas I've had in the last 6 months, which is a good thing. Actually, that's a lie. I guess I did buy a Nikkormat FS, a broken one, it turns out.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's probably got to go to Gary as well. But, that's about all I have to talk about. Actually, yeah. I should mention, I got Simon Forrester to 3D print or design and 3D print a beautiful lens cap for me.
Oh.
And he did an excellent job with it. Maybe we could post a picture of it.
What color is it?
I am a black camera man, as you might know if you've listened to the podcast. Yeah, so I just had to go black. I'm boring like that. Yeah, if you've ever seen Simon Forrester's lens caps on Facebook or eBay or wherever, he can 3D print in pretty much whatever color you want. But yeah,
I bought a couple from my Mamiya Press camera off the shelf.
Yeah,
I got one from Simon as well for my Eichermatt.
Yeah, he does a really nice job. He
Eichoflex. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was going to say maybe a letter dropped off the faceplate.
But yeah, Eichoflex, and I got mine in bright red.
Did you? Yeah.
Looks good.
Simon did kind of like a textured, like leather green pattern on the front of this cap. It looks really nice. Mm-hmm. I think it was one that he was going to put for sale on his store after he designed it. Because the unfortunate thing about the early Rolleiflexes and the early Rolleicords is they're all different cap sizes.
Yeah.
Or not only that, but the difference between the lenses is different between the K1 and K2 Rolleiflex and the Rolleicord 1. So they all take different caps. So
yeah, I have a Rolleicord that's 30 years newer than yours, and it came with two separate caps for that reason. The original cap is long gone.
Yeah, that's what my K1 has too. It has two different caps going that are two different sizes. But yeah, that's what you have to do these days if you don't have an original.
And my original quote unquote from eBay was not.
It was not, no. Well, it's all right. As long as it covers the lens up, that's all that matters.
I did have to take a pair of calipers and measure all the measurements on the front of the Icoflex and send them to Simon so he could determine exactly which one it was, and it come and it fits on there perfectly. And if I'm shaking around, it doesn't fall off or anything. So it's just exactly what I needed.
Yeah. No, he does a really great job. I actually measured mine with a wooden ruler, and he still nailed it. I'm sure it wasn't the most precise, but yeah, it fits perfectly. It's nice and snug.
Yeah. I went over to the farm shop and got the calipers out. That's about as precise as you're going to get.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Maybe not the cleanest tool in the book, but it's a farm greasy tool. Yeah, it had a little grease on it.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly. What can you expect from a farm tool?
Exactly. Well, I think we can take a break here, and we'll be right back.
What makes a memory so special is that it happens only once, and then it's gone. But you can hold on to your memories vividly, beautifully, with Fujifilm. Every day, around the world, 10 million memories are remembered on Fujifilm. Are your memories any less precious? Then next time, get Fujifilm, because a memory happens only once.
Thank you, Sherry, for inviting me to embrace the grain. I assume that, like me, most of you listening have a lot of cameras. My collection includes antique folders and box cameras, professional medium format cameras, rangefinders, point-and-shoots, and plenty of digital cameras. But by far, my favorite format is the 35mm SLR. Let me tell you about one of those. In a recent episode, the Classic Camera Revival team named the various Nikkormat cameras economical entry points of the Nikon F-mount system. For me, a lucky antique store find proved that to be very true. Last year, I tagged along in my wife's business trip to Spartanburg, South Carolina. While she was working hard to bring home the bacon, I was hitting the local antique stores trying to spend some of that bacon. Inside a very quaint downtown store, a very ugly bag caught my attention. I thought it would be perfect for the Mamiya press camera I had recently acquired. The tag said Kikomat Camera Outfit, $49. I nearly dropped it because it was much heavier than expected. A peek inside showed a bunch of stuff wrapped in brown paper. I didn't unwrap them in the store, but they looked like lenses. At the counter, the clerk said, "Ooh, it's got a red dot." "Oh no," I thought, "she's going to tell me it's $50 for the bag only." Nope, the red dot was 20% off. I paid my $40, got to the car, and unwrapped my treasure. The first package was a Nikkor 105 2.5, the lens responsible for the famous Afghan girl portrait. $40 well spent already, and the ugly leather case was still pretty heavy. I pulled out 28mm, 35mm, and 135mm lenses, and then, there at the bottom, was a Nikkormat FT sporting a 50mm 1.4, complete with a metal lens hood. The body and lenses passed the look through the back and push the button test. I felt like running back into the store to give the lady more money. I successfully fought off that feeling. The Nikkormat FT is a solid mechanical SLR introduced in 1965. It was Nikon's second try at building a prosumer camera, and much more successful than the earlier Nikkorex collaboration with Mamiya. Except for the odd placement of the shutter speed selector on the lens mount, it operates like any other 1960s SLR. As a pre-AIS camera, it requires a complex combination of aperture ring settings to index the meter every time a lens is changed. Luckily, my camera's meter is long dead, so I can skip that bizarre ritual. I do make sure the meter pan on the camera lines up with the bunny ears on the lens, mostly for cosmetic reasons. Also, as a longtime Minolta user, the focus and aperture rings feel like they work in reverse, but that's just me. I've been using my copy for this year's Frugal Film project. Full disclosure, I have missed a few months, but the half dozen or so rolls put through the camera look great. I've shot mostly with a 50 and 105. Both still focus smoothly and the aperture rings feel just right. The other lenses are a little rougher, but perfectly usable. Nikkormat FT bodies go for less than $50 from web retailers, in case you can't find an underpriced antique store in your town. That feels like a bargain for a real live Nikon from that company's heyday. The body's extremely well built. The controls are well placed. You'll even get used to the shutter speed dial surrounding the lens mount. It looks pretty much like every mid-century camera should. The lenses, though, are beautiful. Those Nikkor old metal knurled and scalloped focus rings just look so professional. And by the way, they make good images, too. The classic camera revival guys say Nikkormats were often used by photographers at smaller newspapers back in the day. Maybe that's the backstory for my camera. It does have the patina of a well-used and cared-for piece of gear. I like to think of a photojournalist at the Spartanburg Herald covering local basketball games and civil rights protests with this kit. Don't you wish old cameras could tell their stories?
Great a review, Larry. I, too, sometimes wonder exactly what my cameras have seen. And now on to our weekly question from Sacha.
Thank you, everyone, for your participation last week in our question. This week's question is, what is your biggest tip when you are missing your photographic mojo? So if you're tapped out and have no inspiration, how do you keep the ball rolling? With winter coming, I think it's a good time for all of us to think about that. As of next week, or next episode, sorry, when we do this, I will be including answers from our Facebook page at Embrace the Grain. So thank you very much. Leave us your answers. I'll put mine this evening. Thank you.
Hey, folks. Hope you've been enjoying the show. Your support has been downright amazing over the years. So thank you so much. If you would like to help support the show, you can buy us a cup of coffee over on Ko-Fi. That is ko-fi.com/embracethegrainpodcast. That's ko-fi.com/embracethegrainpodcast. Thank you. Back to the show. Alrighty, let's get our socials out because everybody wants to know exactly where they can find us. So you can find me on the Facebook group, Embrace the Grain Photography Podcast group. You can also find me on the Frugal Film Project group. You can find me on Instagram at Sherry Christensen Photography. That's SHERRYCHRISTENSEN Photography. I know, it's long. Sorry, I should have thought about that before I did it. yeah. Larry?
My name is Larry Effler. My Instagram handle is Larry Effler, and my Facebook page is Larry Effler. I'm just not very imaginative.
Sasha?
So you can find me on as well the Embrace the Grain Photography Podcast page. I post there. I post on the Frugal Film Project as well, and my two personal Instagrams for my digital are Evil Kitten Productions, and for my film, it is EKP Film Photo.
And Jake.
You can find me on Instagram at Jake Rose Photo and in the Embrace the Grain Photography Facebook group.
That's great. See you all in a couple weeks. Bye.
Bye.